This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed. Thanks for joining me this Wednesday. Our hour of crime begins with the Mai Ling murder case from Broadway Is My Beat. That episode aired November 5th, 1949. It's followed up by Matthew Slade, private investigator, in the case of murder, his story from May 7th, 1965.
Broadway's My Beat, from Times Square to Columbus Circle, the gaudiest, the most violent, the lonesomest mile in the world.
Broadway's My Beat, with Larry Thor as Detective Danny Clover.
Broadway. It's a neon-lighted revival meeting that screams for the joy and the salvation. And it's a lonely path that sighs down into darkness. It's a fury of voices and stamping feet, or a cry that wanders and waits to be heard. It's Happy Alley with happy talk, where a hot trumpet plays background music for a panhandler. However you want it, that's how it is. It's Broadway, My Beat. The November twilight filtered into my office at police headquarters, and I sat there looking at it, pushing away the time for the filling out of my daily report. There were other diversions. Through the open window, I watched a girl walk down the street. She wore a green silk dress that knew summer was over but didn't care. Then I heard two things, a sigh that came from me and a door opening that came from the door.
I have no wish to trespass upon a reverie of delight, Daniel.
There was only one man who could talk to me like that. A miniature of a man called Lee Kai. Lee Kai, professor of Oriental art at the university. He hadn't changed. The same black military-looking jacket that buttoned high on the throat. The same patent leather shoes with spats slightly pink. And the face still as if it had been engraved on yellow shantung.
Daniel, may I presume upon you?
Anything you want, Lee, anytime.
Then permit me to read you this telegram.
Is that all? You could have presumed bigger.
I shall, when you have read the telegram. It is addressed to me and it says in three words, "Terror follows me." It is signed Mei Ling. Only three words. Is not 10 words the usual?
Yeah, he's a frugal one, this Mei Ling, huh?
Mei Ling is a delicate interweaving of all that is lovely and exquisite in a girl. I do not think she meant to be frugal.
I do not think I know what you're talking about.
Of course. Therefore, I will explain. You see, Mei Ling, this lovely girl of whom I have told you so much already, she brings me a statuette of the goddess Kuan Yin, the Chinese goddess of mercy. And among friends, there is no need for circumlocution.
Of course. For what?
Circumlocution, of course.
Oh.
The Kuan Yin was smuggled out of my bleeding China, Daniel. It is worth approximately $100,000. Mei Ling was bringing it to me. And now, in three words, terror follows her. You understand what I need of you?
Not yet.
I want you to meet Mei Ling's train at 125th Street at 8 tonight. She is in private car 23. You will give her the protection from the terror that follows her, Daniel.
Oh, we have other departments for that, Lee. I could...
But you are the friend department. No, Daniel?
In the nighttime, the 125th Street station hangs over the edge of a glittering world. Arrival and departure have a special meaning in the dark. There are shadows between everything, and the talk is always whispers. I walked out on the concrete platform toward the light on the bulk of the train, and I saw him, the man in a conductor's cap, holding a lantern and looking down at his watch. I asked him a question.
Car 23, next one down through this empty coach.
Oh, thanks.
Hey, wait a minute. Can't get in 23, private coach.
That's all right, I just wanted...
Nope, can't let you on, nope. Sorry, but nope. Orders.
Want to see something?
Huh?
Look at this for a second. Go on, hold it up to the light.
Yeah. Police badge, eh?
Yep.
Yep. Train pulls out in 7 minutes, mister.
Oh, bury me not on a lone prairie. Oh, excuse me, mister. I didn't know where... Hey, you big enough to come from Texas. Are you from Texas?
No. Now, if you let me through here...
Well, old city fella, huh? You know how I can tell? City fella's always in a hurry. That's how I can tell.
Yeah, now, one side, friend.
Now, in Texas, it's different. People are friendly. Just folks down in Texas. I'll show you what I mean here. You have a drink.
Maybe you didn't understand. I said one side, friend.
Hey, you meaner than a shoat with a cut snout. No drink, huh? Well, Texan don't prejudice a man because he ain't no drinker. Let me tell you about Texas.
Maybe I gotta prove it to you. Out of the way. Well, you got the idea.
Sure, I got the idea. See if you can get this one through your head.
What are you...
Grand Central State. Oh. Hey, you, wake up. Now, don't ask me where you are. I've been shouting out my lungs where you are.
Oh.
Come on, get up. There you are. Hey, you're the policeman.
Yeah, the finest of the finest.
Stumbled, huh?
Later. First, I was slugged.
Feature that.
You feature it. I haven't made car 23 yet.
Hey, come back here. I've got a writer report.
I finally did. I finally made it. Car 23. Inside, the place was a shambles. Upholstery ripped, baggage opened and tossed across the seats, as if someone had been in a desperate hurry to find something. I noticed her then. She was sitting there, very lovely, very delicate, the frown pressed at the corners of her lips. I guessed her name was Mei Ling, but I knew she was dead. The bullet hole between the almond eyes made this common knowledge to anyone who took the time to look. To a policeman, a death scene is a place of business. There was nothing there that looked like a priceless statuary called Kuan Yin. I made some notes, called the station master, then found a phone booth to make the violent death of Mei Ling by person or persons unknown a matter of routine.
Sergeant Tartaglia speaking.
Danny Clover. Mei Ling's dead. Send the boys down to Grand Central. Photographers, fingerprints, technical, the whole crew. The coroner, too. I'll wait for them.
Okay. Hey, say, Danny, a guy called. Said he wanted to talk to you. Said it was urgent.
Who said all that?
John Smith. Well, that's what he said his name was, John Smith. I wrote it down so I wouldn't forget. He said something about wait a minute. Here, I'll spell it to you. K-U-A-N-Y-I...
Kuan Yin?
Yeah, Danny, that's it.
What's John Smith's address?
1212 Mott Street. Got it?
Yeah. Goodbye, Tartaglia. Anyone who wanted to see me about a Kuan Yin was a man I wanted to see. I waited around Grand Central until the crew from headquarters arrived, then I took off my squad car and hit Mott Street in 10 minutes. The red brick pagoda that bore the address of one John Smith held all the charm and grace of a 20th century housing project. The only thing oriental about it was a cast iron dragon that snarled at me from the door knocker. I picked up its head and banged it against the door.
Ah, you would be Danny Clover, and I would be John Smith. The ecstasy is mutual. Please enter.
The thing that stood in front of me, I didn't believe. It was a mound of flesh wrapped in a scented mandarin's robe. Perched on its shoulder was a small white monkey with enormous eyes that loathed me with an enormous loathe. John Smith looked like a fat crock of Ming pottery, but he talked as if he'd spent a lot of time tilling the good earth around Harvard.
You admire my monkey, Danny Clover. Rest assured, he admires you.
I hate him. Get him out of here.
You are frank, Danny Clover. We shall get along splendidly. Now, run along to bed, Max. It's way beyond, you know. I'll tuck you in later, Max. Now go.
Revolting beast, isn't he? I say that deliberately.
It depends on your point of view. Me, I find all the answers to all the mysteries of eternity in Max's eyes. You gaze at my house. You like it?
Yeah, looks like you've collected all the loot in China. Cozy, though.
Spurious loot, Danny Clover. It's all fake. These statuettes, for instance, tourist stuff.
Hmm?
And all this rubbish, nothing so delicate or so desirable as the Kuan Yin image, an evanescent image, a will-o'-the-wisp image.
You don't say. Tell me more.
I shall. A most intimate source in Hong Kong has revealed to me that the fabulous, the priceless Kuan Yin has vanished. Do you have a theory as to where she might be?
Should I have a theory?
I thought perhaps the eminent Oriental art expert known to both of us as Li Kai may have helped you formulate one.
Your most intimate source operates in New York, too.
I have other intimates.
Besides Max? Try one from Texas.
Texas? What is that, a person, place, or object?
You know, I wouldn't know.
Exactly. And now, Danny Clover, a word of caution. The Kuan Yin is a legend among my people, a fairy tale.
Fairy tales are sometimes bloody.
A most discerning observation. On a sensitive and intelligent mind, they can leave a most fatal scar. Sometimes not only on the mind.
It's sweet, the way you try to scare me.
The Kuan Yin is a goddess of mercy and compassion. If you know where she is, may she watch over you. If you don't, we have nothing further to discuss. And now I must tuck Max in. Au revoir, Danny Clover.
I shook his hand, watched him wince, then bowed out of his fat presence. John Smith was a man who would keep. Now there was one place I just had to go, to the university, to break the news to Li Kai. It was at this time in my life that I exploded the myth that the thirst for knowledge never ceases. The door to the Arts and Science building was locked. It took me a half hour to find the night watchman, go through the policeman's badge routine, and get ushered to the self-service elevator.
Wait a minute. Hey, wait a minute. Thank you. Thank you very much.
I feel silly saying this, but floor, please.
The third.
Good, me too.
I've never seen you about the building. What are you in, arts or sciences?
I never knew which. I'm Danny Clover, a policeman.
Oh?
Mm-hmm. And you're in...
Seismology. I'm Professor Higgins.
Professor?
Oh, here we are. Third floor.
Oh, yeah.
You were saying?
I was saying Professor of Seismology with a question mark after it. What is seismology exactly?
Exactly. It's that branch of geophysics which has to do with earthquakes and their attendant phenomena.
Mm-hmm.
Here's my lab. Good night.
Oh, before you go, and in non-scientific terms, could you tell me where Professor Li Kai's office is?
Li Kai?
Yeah.
How nice. In the Argo, any friend of his is a friend of mine. Now we'll shake hands. I'm glad to know you. I'll show you his office.
You've known Li Kai for a long time.
Why, he slapped my... He was in attendance when I was born. There were no doctors nearby then. In China, Mr. Clover. In the interior.
Oh, and from that moment on, you became interested in earthquakes and their attendant phenomena.
Pretty nearly. Understand, Mr. Clover, I enjoy seismology. A girl can always make her way in the world with a good, sound knowledge of seismology, I always say.
I always say the same thing.
It does make for dull conversation, doesn't it?
Well,
Here's Li Kai's office. Professor Kai. Professor Kai! Professor Kai!
There was only one man who could lie on the floor like that, a miniature of a man called Li Kai. He had only changed a little bit. The patent leathers were the same, and the spats, the crinkled face. But the small change made a big difference. The sharp object sticking in the middle of his black military-looking jacket made him a venerable ancestor to whatever good he'd done in this world. I knelt down beside him. It was a letter opener plunged deep into his back, and on its handle it said, Acme Life Assurance Company. Put your life in our hands.
You are listening to Broadway's My Beat, starring Larry Thor as Detective Danny Clover. 50,000 or more, always in the jackpot on Sing It Again. Music by Gene Autry and Vaughn Monroe. Mystery and thrills with gangbusters Philip Marlowe, Johnny Dollar, and Danny Clover, the Broadway cop. That's the one-way ticket to top fun on most of these CBS stations every Saturday night. This fall, when you hear them all on CBS, Saturday night promises top music, top adventure, and a chance at radio's top prize.
There's this about Broadway. It savors the exotic while it's taking bites out of a hot dog. The deaths of Mei Ling and Lee Kai were duly reported for the next morning's newsstands, were scanned by the crowd while reaching for their respective mustard jars. Then Broadway went about its business. You can't blame Broadway. It's got too many other things to consider, like T formations and mass substitutions, the weather, making a buck. But a policeman with a murder in his hands has to make a world outside all that. Mine revolved about a specific Chinese statuette called Kuan Yin, and incidentally worth $100,000. It also included paying final respects. I took a ride down to a twisted alley off of Mott Street. The festivities for Lee Kai's funeral had already begun. Venerable Chinese ladies and gentlemen stood on the curb and with great ceremony lighted firecrackers and tossed them serenely into the air. As the body of Lee Kai approached, others tossed money into his open coffin to ensure his price of admission into heaven. Walking directly behind was a lady by the name of Higgins, Professor Kate Higgins. She was dressed in a mandarin robe, and her tears were the tears some enchanted princess might weep. There were only two, one under each eye, and each one a jewel. And then across the street through the procession, a face that I had seen once before in a train station brought me back. Pardon me. I'm sorry. Pardon. Tell me what Texas, kid. I got more time now.
Who are you?
Why leave a great place like Texas just to strong-arm a city fella?
Take off, friend. They warned me about talking to strangers.
In here, friend, in this alleyway where we can be far from the city's rattle. In here where we can be pards. In here.
Take your hands off of me.
Talk to me, pard. Who told you to slug me on that train?
I can do it now without nobody whispering in my ear.
Do it.
Yeah. Oh.
It's going to be a well-filled saddle tonight in the old hoosegow. I was looking for Professor Higgins. This is her laboratory, isn't it?
Yes. The professor isn't in. I'm John Scarn, her assistant.
Danny Clover, police.
Social or business? I only ask because Kate has such various callers. Last week it was a gentleman peddling hot Persian prayer rugs. I got quite a size him out of him.
Size him?
You're not hep, are you? Size him. Earthquake. A big bang.
Tell me, what do you do around here when you're not having seisms?
Well, I'll explain it to you. See, these things here are seismographs. They're connected to another machine embedded in concrete below this building. Oh. If there's an earth tremor, it's picked up by the machine downstairs and recorded on these.
I see. And this needle here, writing on this rotating drum, records the time of the shock.
Precisely.
Interesting. Mind if I take a closer look?
Well, take it easy, Mr. Clover. We don't need a trembler to disturb the needle, you know. It's very delicately balanced. It'll even record footsteps that come too close to it.
What do you do with these recordings after you've got them?
File them. Each recording is for a 24-hour period.
Unfile yesterday's reports and send them to my office.
Well, but...
And do you get reports from other stations that do this work?
Yes, every day, but...
Send yesterday's, all of them, down to police headquarters.
Now, see here...
Mr. Scarn, you had your size them today?
I'll send everything down just as soon as I can get them together.
Good. And quietly. No one's to know. Another thing, Mr. Scarn. Who has access to this lab?
Why, just Kate and me. And, yes, the night watchman. Yes, we three. We have the only keys, I believe.
Thanks. And Kate, Professor Higgins, where would I find her?
Perhaps at her apartment. 125 Morningside Drive, I believe.
Thanks again, Mr. Scarn.
Just a moment. I have to put something on.
I'll wait. Clover, why is it that everything happens to you while you're on duty? Maybe it's because you're on duty.
Oh, it's you. How nice. You caught me just as I stepped out of the shower, so you'll have to take me as I am.
robe and all. Come in.
I could wait outside until you...
A shy policeman, how charming. You can trust me. Go on in.
Thank you, Professor.
Over there, but the fire's nice. I always dry myself by the fire, but you interrupted that.
Easy, Clover.
I'm here. Tell me.
I didn't say anything.
Oh. Shall I get us something? A drink? Do you object to the phonograph? Some men do, you know.
I saw you at Lee Kai's funeral.
I saw you, too.
You're different now.
You're not?
That's right. I'm still thirsting for knowledge. So talk to me about the things Chinese, Professor.
The Kuan Yin, for instance?
For instance?
A miraculous goddess believed by the Chinese to have only to kiss a wound to make it vanish.
$100,000 a kiss. It's expensive healing.
There are some who would pay more.
Two murders, maybe?
More, if they have to.
Yeah. You told me Lee Kai slapped you into the first breath you ever took. What else did he do for you?
Everything. He was my father, my brother, my companion, my teacher.
And Mei Ling?
I didn't know everyone in China, policeman. Nice policeman.
And the man named John Smith?
John Doe, yes. John Smith, no. Give up.
All right. Invite me to an earthquake sometime, will you? I'll take time out for it.
You'll love it. There's nothing quite so exciting as when the earth moves. Danny?
Yeah?
The Kuan Yin. You could give her to me. I'm only a professor on a professor's salary, but I could think of some way to pay you for it.
Oh? What makes you think I've got the Kuan Yin?
Because Lee told me he'd gone to you. Because you found Mei Ling. Because it would have been simple for you to steal it from a dead girl.
Yeah, it would have been. But you know, I didn't think of it. Also, she didn't have it. Now it's your turn again.
Lee Kai would want me to have it. No one else.
I'll make a note of it, Professor. Now, would you unlock the door, please? I promised Mother I'd be home early.
Of course. There's frustration everywhere, isn't there, policeman? Nothing but frustration.
I think I remembered to tip my hat. I know I remembered to get back to police headquarters. I hustled Sergeant Tartaglia off his fat comic book and sat down at my desk to go over the sheaf of seismographs I'd had Skarn send down. Not only were they dull reading, but for a long time they didn't make sense. I kept trying. You can talk, Tartaglia.
Item one, Danny. I've questioned the Texas cowboy in his cell.
Mm-hmm.
McGrath won't talk, won't open his mouth. Hey, in a Texan, this must be some kind of terrible disease.
Okay, physician. Item two.
Item two is alibis. Good and indifferent. At the time of Lee Kai's murder, John Smith was giving a dinner party. Assistant Skarn was calling a square dance. Hey, you know, Danny, they're fun. You ever been to one?
Ask me sometime, Tartaglia.
Yeah. item two continued. Professor Higgins was to a movie. The night watchman checked in at a station the other side of the campus. Item three. San Francisco Customs reports this Mei Ling never had no Kuan Yin.
Tell me that again.
The Kuan Yin Mei Ling was supposed to have. She never had it. Danny, this means two people was killed for something they didn't have.
Huh? You said something to Tugler? When San Francisco Customs reported they had no records on the Kuan Yin, something clicked into place. If the Kuan Yin existed at all, I figured there was only one place where it could exist. So I went there. Back to the university in the office of Lee Kai, lecturer and collector of Chinese art, now deceased.
Oh, it's you, Mr. Clover. We thought perhaps we would meet you here.
The place was a mess. Standing in the midst of the debris was the monkey-owning poet John Smith. And in a corner, with a soft light playing with the amber of her hair, was Kate Higgins.
Danny Clover, it's always a delight to be where you are.
The policeman is a meddling, stupid fool, Kate.
Yeah, you warned me, didn't you? First to the hired thug, then during a lecture on spurious loot.
Mr. Clover, I'm afraid I must dispense with you.
Let him talk. I like to watch his mouth.
Thanks. So I'll talk. Lee Kai was a wise little man. He had the Kuan Yin all the time. All he wanted was to find out who was trying to get it away from him. He came to me because he knew his enemies would follow him to me.
And it backfired, shall we say, in his face.
His and Mei Ling, the girl with whom he planned the whole puppet show.
You have talked enough, Mr. Clover. Quite enough.
I'd been watching Smith, but where that knife came from, I'll never know. He held it low, slanting upwards for ripping, and then he lunged at me. I sidestepped and reached back, grabbed one of Lee Kai's art figures, and threw it at his head. He ducked, and the statue shattered against the wall.
Kuan Yin. The Kuan Yin.
And there it was, an ebony image shining with some inner light. It held us in a kind of suspended trance. Lee Kai had been clever. He'd encrusted the Kuan Yin in a cheap plaster cast and set it alongside the rest of his art, one of the oldest tricks in the world. I came out of the trance faster than John Smith did. He lay there with the rest of the crockery, just as pale, just as broken, just as unconscious.
He can no longer harm you, Danny. He was an evil man.
Yeah, and tricky. Hiring that hatchet man McGrath to kill Mei Ling and slug me on the train. Kate.
Yes, Danny?
Maybe I shouldn't ask you this, Kate. But how come you were with Smith?
I knew his greed would finally lead him to Kuan Yin, as your curiosity led you to her. And to me. To me, Danny.
Kate, do you always repay kindness with murder?
What are you talking about?
You killed Lee Kai.
Danny, you're insane. Why do you talk like that?
Because the seismograph in your lab registered a disturbance at 9 o'clock last night, the time of Lee Kai's murder.
How do you know it wasn't the recording of a minor shock someplace in the world?
Because no other laboratory picked it up. That's when you stabbed him, Kate, at 9 o'clock. You said you were at the movies. Nobody could prove that.
Danny.
But you weren't, Kate. You weren't at the movies. You were in your lab. You stabbed Lee Kai and dragged his body down the hall to his office. He was a small man. You could have done that.
Yes. It's no use. You would deprive me of the Kuan Yin anyhow.
Two killings for the goddess of mercy. Doesn't add up.
I would kill anyone who would deprive me of the Kuan Yin. Yes, you too, if I could now. Danny?
Uh-huh.
Let me hold the Kuan Yin, Danny. The Kuan Yin?
Yeah. Here.
Kuan Yin. Fabulous. Kuan Yin.
I watched her hand slide down the side of her cheek and her body go taut. Her eyes fixed and the Kuan Yin narrowed. I caught her before she fell to the floor. When the boys from headquarters came, it took four of them to heave John Smith onto a stretcher. They started for Kate Higgins. I told them to mark her fragile. Even a professor of earthquakes can break. In the November sun, Broadway shimmers like some frozen city rising out of a frozen lake. It's clear, crystal clear, and its air is fresh and clean. You close your eyes because you know it's a lie. The easy laughter that snarls when your back is turned. The spectaculars that advertise the grave. The welcoming hand that turns to ice in yours. It's Broadway, the gaudiest, the most violent, the lonesomest mile in the world. Broadway, my beat.
Broadway's My Beat stars Larry Thor as Detective Danny Clover and is written by Morton Fine and David Friedkin. The musical score was composed and conducted by Wilbur Hatch, and the program was produced and directed by Elliot Lewis. The cast tonight included Mary Jane Croft, Charles Calvert, William Johnstone, Barton Yarborough, William Conrad, Junius Matthews, and Jerry Hausner. Stay tuned for Sing It Again, which follows immediately over most of these same CBS stations. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System. Thank you.
Hollywood, welcome to Starlight Mystery Theater. Matthew Slade, private investigator. We invite you to take your seat as Slade unfolds a case of murder.
In my job, the hours are odd. So are the circumstances and the people I meet. You could even call some of them dangerous. My calling card reads, Matthew Slade, private investigator. Hello? Have you notified the police? I see. All right, suppose we talk about it. I'll be right over. It was a woman. She had a problem. I was the guy she'd selected to solve it. I picked up my hat and coat, turned the knob on the door of my private office, walked through the reception room and out into the hall. I took the single flight of stairs down onto the landing at twos, strode through the doorway and out into the street. It was raining. I pulled the collar of my coat up as the rain started to drip off my hat. I headed for the parking lot.
Good evening, Mr. Slade. You ready to go home?
Not yet, Jose. I got a job to do.
Well, it must be a very important case for you to be out on a night like this.
Yes, very important. It involves a dead man. I drove off the lot and headed for 43 Meadowbrook Crescent, a 12-minute drive from my office. Meadowbrook's on the east side of town, a fashionable area for the society set. The clock on my dash panel read 8:45 as I drove through the impressive gateway and up the gravel drive to a white mansion. I'd known the victim. His name was Miles Wiggins. He'd hired me several months ago to trace a rare coin. That was an easy job. We'd only met twice, both times in my office. Now, I was to meet him again. Only this time, there wouldn't be much of a greeting, not in his condition. Suddenly, I felt uneasy. I thought of turning back. I couldn't stop now. My super curious mind had to find out why Regan's wife was calling me instead of the police. As a bolt of lightning streaked across the sky, I could see the outline of the house. The place was in darkness. I stepped on the brake. Before I had time to turn the motor off, the front door opened and Marion Regan stepped out into the porch.
What took you so long?
It's a bad night, Mrs. Regan. Would you mind shining that flashlight off my face?
Oh, I'm sorry. Come in.
Where is he?
In the living room. Through here, Mr. Slade.
What happened to the lights?
They went off just after I called you. The power lines must be down.
Well, it's pretty black in here. Doesn't it frighten you?
Nothing frightens me now. Not after what I've been through. He's over there by the fireplace.
Let me have the flashlight. Yeah. Shot through the heart. Is this your husband's gun?
Yes. It was an accident, Mr. Slade.
Now, suppose you tell me all about it.
Yes, only let's get out of this room. We can talk in the library. There's a couch over by the window. We can sit there. Mind the table, Mr. Slade.
Oh, thanks. All right, now, let's have it from the beginning.
Yes, from the beginning. It all started around 2 o'clock this afternoon. We were in the other room. Miles was sitting at the desk writing. I was on the couch listening to the radio.
That concludes our program of symphonic rhapsodies. For the next 15 minutes, the piano melodies of William Bryan.
That's that.
You're still determined to go through with it? How do you know it'll work?
It will work. I'll mail this letter on our way to Mountain Springs and then...
Miles, why must you run away from this?
Marion, do you realize my predicament? When the board learns I've transferred shares over to David Corby without their approval, I'll be through anyway.
But why? Why do that?
Must we go through it all again? There is no other way. I've embezzled company funds. Corby is blackmailing me. This way, I'll get out of it with a clear name. It's simple. Corby replaces the funds in return for my stock. This letter of resignation will reach the office Monday. We'll stay at the Springs till things quiet down. Corby will call a board meeting and the rest will be up to him.
Won't they become suspicious?
Embarrassing questions if I were around could lead to an investigation.
What did you do with the money?
Now, Marion, you promised there would be no questions. In a couple of months, this whole business should pass.
$250,000 doesn't disappear into thin air. Miles, I want to know.
I can't tell you, and that ends it.
I won't budge from this room until you tell me.
When you come to your senses, take the train and come on up to the lodge.
I'm going upstairs to pack.
Miles, I'm going to the police. I can't go through with it. It's senseless for you to run away.
Do you know what they do to embezzlers?
We could get an attorney. There's Martin Downing. He'll get you out of this. It's better than running the rest of your life.
That's a chance I'll have to take. Now, if you want to leave with me...
Miles, I can't.
Your final word?
Listen to me.
There's nothing further to say.
Miles. Miles. I'd like a cigarette, if I may, Mr. Slade. Oh, the lights. They must have repaired the power lines, thank heaven. Thank you.
What do you know about David Corby?
He's head of the legal department and a member of the board of directors. He's an ambitious man.
What happened after your husband left the room?
I decided to call on David Corby to see if he'd listen to reason. I pleaded with him, begged him to give Miles a chance. He wouldn't listen. He said Miles deserved what was coming to him.
Where does this Corby live?
Savoy Towers Apartments, Knob Hill.
What happened when you returned home?
Miles was in the living room. He'd been drinking.
Where have you been? To the police to turn me in?
Of course not.
You were anxious enough to try and persuade me to give myself up. Well, I'm not going.
Miles.
You've been to the police, haven't you?
Miles.
Haven't you?
You're hitting my arm. You're drunk. You don't know what you're saying.
Drunk, huh? I'll show you how drunk I really am.
Miles, put that gun down.
Try to send me to jail.
Listen to me. I haven't been to the police. I wouldn't.
Stay back. Get back, I tell you.
Give me the gun, Miles.
Let go of my wrist. I told you to stay back.
I tried to get the gun from him. It fired.
Show me your position in relation to your husband's when the gun went off.
Well, I was standing in front of him. We were beside the desk. He was shaking me. Then he reached into his coat and withdrew the gun. I grabbed his right wrist and we struggled.
He held the gun in his right hand?
Yes, I grabbed it and tried to turn his wrist so he'd drop it. The gun was pointing towards his heart when it went off.
Well, Mrs. Regan, take hold of my right wrist and try to twist it as you did your husband's.
Well, it was like this.
Mm-hmm. A little harder, Mrs. Regan.
You're resisting, Mr. Slade. I can't.
All right. Are your fingerprints on the gun?
No. I mean, I don't think so. Oh, I just don't know.
What happened to the letter your husband wrote?
I have it in my pocket. After the accident, I took it from his desk.
Let me see the letter.
Why? I've told you what's in it.
I'd like to read it for myself, Mrs. Regan.
Now look, Mr. Slade.
A letter, Mrs. Regan.
Very well.
It's been opened.
Of course. I opened it.
Does your husband write with his left hand?
Yes, he's left-handed. Mr. Slade, must you keep asking these foolish questions?
Part of my service. Now, you say your husband was drunk when you came in. You had an argument. He took out a gun. You made a grab for it and went off.
Yes.
Okay. On your part, it was an accident. Well, if you're telling the truth, you're in the clear. So how do I fit into all this?
I want you to remove my husband's body.
You what?
I want it to look as though he's disappeared.
Oh, now, wait a minute. I'm a licensed private investigator, not a body snatcher. You can't be serious.
I'll pay you $10,000.
You've got to be kidding.
I'm not kidding, Mr. Slade. That's my offer. I need your help. I'm willing to pay well for it.
I know I'm in the business to do other people's laundry, but this is a little too dirty.
If it's a question of all money, I'm willing to raise...
Let's get one thing straight. I work with the law, not against it. If I were caught doing such a thing, I'd lose my license and end up in jail. It's strictly illegal. I don't run that kind of an operation. Now, you maintain it was an accident. Okay, it was an accident. I wasn't a witness, I can't say either
but
way.
But only the two of us would know. Mrs. Slade, I've got to go through with this.
I'd suggest you call the police. You can save yourself a lot of trouble.
I can't do that. Not now.
Why is it so important the body shouldn't be found? You told me you wanted Miles to give himself up.
I've been thinking that perhaps Miles was right. The less said, the better. Why expose Miles' past? It'll be a lot easier on me and...
Stop pacing back and forth, Mrs. Regan. Please sit down. You make me nervous.
I'm sorry.
Now, suppose you tell me what really happened tonight.
No more than I've already told you.
All right, all right. Have it your own way. You need someone to play sap for you, Mrs. Regan. It's not going to be me.
David Corby will cover the embezzlement. It can be made to look as though Miles had just disappeared. People do that.
Yeah, one every 3 minutes, I know. Miles hasn't just disappeared. He was shot. Removing the body is illegal, and I don't intend to do it. Incidentally, what makes you think you can get Corby to cover the theft now that Miles is dead?
He gave me his word.
Oh?
Before you arrived, I phoned him. Told him about the shooting. He seemed glad Miles was dead. He wanted to know about the shares. I told him Miles had signed them over to me. He said he'd replace the money if I turned the shares over to him. I told him no.
You're playing with dynamite, Mrs. Regan. There's still time to get out of this before it's too late.
I didn't want to tell you this. It's Corby. I'm afraid for my life.
He's out to kill you?
As sure as we're sitting in this room. You see, David Corby was my first husband. I divorced him to marry Miles. He's had it in for both of us ever since. He threatened my life tonight unless I turned those shares over to him.
Where are they?
In the safe.
Tell me, was Miles' life insured?
Yes.
Substantially?
$100,000.
Made out to you, of course.
Of course.
Were you ever in love with Miles?
Once, early in our marriage. He changed. You don't believe that, do you?
Not altogether. What is it you're after, Mrs. Regan? The insurance? Control of Miles' company? What?
That was unfair. How could you say those things with my husband in the next room dead?
I haven't seen real evidence of tears.
You are heartless.
Cautious. It pays in my business.
Mr. Slade, you must help me. Please reconsider. I'll give you any amount you ask. $40,000, $50,000 in cash.
You have that kind of money in cash?
I can get it. Tonight if necessary.
Where?
From David Corby.
Corby? A second ago he was out to kill you. You are a liar, aren't you?
The money's part of his deal for the shares. $75,000 to me.
Mm-hmm. You tell a most unconvincing story. The police will shoot holes in it in seconds. They're not amateurs, you know. By the way, what's your story to the police going to be?
Can't you understand? I can't go to the police. All I need...
All you need is a pigeon. I told you it's not going to be me.
Mr. Slade, there's a limit to my patience.
Oh, your dialogue gets better every second.
I'm asking you for the last time.
Hasn't anyone ever said no to you?
Do you think I killed him?
Did you?
How could you even think I did?
Well, go ahead. Prove to me you didn't.
I didn't ask you here to have you interrogate me or insult me. I'm offering you a proposition. One honest person to another.
Very good, Mrs. Regan. Quite a song and dance, but it doesn't fool me.
You can't talk to me like that.
Well, I can and will. You'll have to forgive my insubordination. I rate very high on that.
Let's not argue. I just want you to help me.
We're not going
to
go through that again, are we?
Mr. Slade.
The answer is no. Flat and final. Good night, Mrs. Regan. Park it, Jose.
Yes, sir, Mr. Slate. You going to be working long?
A couple of hours, some paperwork to clear up.
Hey, what happened with that case you were just on?
An accident, Jose. At least that's what the lady called it. An accident. I was back in the office trying to wade through my tax return, but I couldn't keep my mind on the job. I kept thinking of Miles Regan lying cold as ice on that living room floor. His wife begging me to dump the body. The story wouldn't stand up in an old lady's tea party, let alone a police grilling. Questions racked my brain. I knew I should be calling the police and making a report. Curiosity got the better of me. David Corby lived at the Savoy Towers. 18 minutes later, I was pressing his door buzzer. Yes, Corby?
Who?
David Corby. The gentleman with the blackmail racket.
You said what?
You hard of hearing?
Who are you?
Ashamus, private. The name's Slade.
Am I supposed to get excited? What do you want?
I'd like to talk to you about a dead man.
You ritzing me or something?
If I am, I'm not aware of it.
You've got the wrong party. Now, if you don't mind, investigate somewhere else.
Marion Regan says you were blackmailing her husband. She offered me $50,000 to dump the body. Your $50,000. Well, are we going to stand out here in the hall all night and tell the neighbors about it?
You'd better come in. Now, suppose we start from the top.
You might ask Mrs. Regan to come out from behind those drapes. She'll get awfully tired standing there all night.
You're very observant, Mr. Slade.
Didn't take you long to get here.
Get to the point before I call the police.
Police? A blackmailer calling the police?
For your information, I have a high standing in this town. A respected businessman.
So was Al Capone, according to him. Probably the reason they locked him up.
Who's been writing your material, Slade? It's cute.
Oh, that... Well, I've been reading some of those Chandler books, you know, the biting, sarcastic private eye and all that. Just trying it on for size. Now let's cut out the babble. Who really killed Miles Regan?
Well, look, Slade, the gun went off. It was an accident.
Then notify the police and no problem.
You're the one creating a problem.
That's because I can be pulled in as an accessory after the fact. And I don't intend letting you two saddle me with that.
What is it you want out of this? More money? Stock in the company?
Miles Regan was a client of mine. There's such a thing as ethics in this business. You may not have heard of it. When a client is bumped off and you have an idea why, you're supposed to do something about it.
It's as I told you earlier, an accident.
Then why dump the body?
To save the shame and embarrassment. to protect Miles's name.
Oh, bravo, Mrs. Regan. Oh, I especially like that little throb you got in your voice when you got to his name. That was very good. But it won't fool the police. When they start working on you, you'll crack in short order, and so will Corby.
Where's the motive?
They'll pick one to suit them. They're very good at that.
Why don't you put in with us, Slade? You could make yourself some money.
Illegal money.
So we're bending the law a little. It's done every day.
You don't really need me to get rid of a dead body, and you know it. For $500, you could hire a two-bit hood. You need a pigeon. Someone to take the rap. Someone who'd look good at the police, whom they could put through the ringer. You thought you could buy me. While I was disposing of the body, Mrs. Regan would be calling the police, and they'd catch me in the act. It's too bad you counted on me as being dishonest. It just might have worked.
I like the way you figure things out.
Oh, there's much more.
Please go on.
I don't think it was Mrs. Regan who killed her husband.
Interesting. Who did then?
You.
What makes you think he was murdered?
Mrs. Regan tipped me to that. When I worked for Miles, I got to know him pretty well. His hobby was collecting coins. Well, we got around to talking about guns. That's my interest. Miles abhorred guns. Unlikely, then, that he'd keep one. That's point number one. Mrs. Regan's story was that she tried to wrest the gun from Miles' grasp, and it went off. He weighed all of 200 pounds. Supposedly, he was drunk. Now, when Mrs. Regan enacted what happened, she barely had the strength to lift my arm, let alone twist it. Highly unlikely she'd have been able to twist the arm of a violent, drunken man twice her size.
Mrs. Slade.
Let me finish, Mrs.
Regan.
I won't
stand here unless you make these insinuations.
No harm, Miriam. Let him go on.
Now, you told me your husband held the gun in his right hand. And later, you told me he was left-handed. Then you told me about the hurried trip to see Corby. I think Miles changed his mind. He was going to the police. That meant you both had to work fast. Now, as I see it, Corby came back to the house with you.
Well, Regan, have you got those share certificates signed?
No, and I'm not going to sign them. Not over to you. I've changed my mind.
What do you mean you've changed your mind? We had a deal.
Not anymore. I'm going to own up to what I've done.
Well, that's not being very smart, Miles. You know I'll never let you get away with it.
I expect you'll try. But that doesn't bother me. I'll offer to make restitution. It will be up to the board to accept or reject it.
You can't double-deal me like this. Now, you'll sign those certificates over to me if you know what's good for you.
You're wasting your breath. Threatening me won't get you anywhere. This is something I've got to do.
Well, now, look. If you want a little better deal, I'll go along with you.
It's too late for that. I have to face up to the mess I've got myself into. I'll take what comes.
Pretty speech, Miles. All it will buy you is a term in jail.
It'll buy me peace of mind, worth the price.
Oh, don't make me laugh. What are you trying to protect? An honesty you never had? I know when I'm being kidded. Now let's stop playing games.
It's no game, but the end of yours.
Now look, Miles. You're going ahead with this deal, whether you like it or not.
You're a hard man to convince, David. There won't be any deal.
Well, perhaps this will change your mind.
You're not capable of shooting anyone, and you know it. You haven't the guts.
I want those shares. I'm going to get them.
Go ahead.
Shoot me.
That won't get you the shares. You certainly can't scare me into giving them to you.
Get away from that phone, Miles.
You're through blackmailing me, David. We'll let
I'm
the police...
You, Miles, put down that phone. Put it down.
Well, Corby, was that close to the truth?
Very clever, Mr. Slade. Too bad we have to dispose of you. I was getting to like you.
My, my, you certainly do have a lot of guns. Incidentally, why did you leave that other one beside the body?
I figured we'd get your fingerprints on it.
Well, that's not very smart. The police can check out the serial number. They'll trace it to you.
That revolver was stolen. I purchased it from, shall we say, an undesirable type.
How do you intend getting rid of me?
Simple. We take you back to the Regan house. I shoot you with the same gun I shot Miles. It will look like you shot him, then killed yourself.
You'll have to do better than that. Where's the motive?
The police will come up with one. They're good at that. Remember? Well, shall we go?
Reluctantly.
It's unlocked. I thought I'd locked it before I left.
Inside. Get the lights, Marion. Okay, Slade. Over near his body. Pleasant dreams.
Drop that gun, Corby. Turn around. Make it slow.
What is this? Who are you?
That's Sergeant Dinelli, Homicide Division. Good timing, Sid. You had me worried for a moment.
I knew I should never have listened to you, David.
Shut up, Marion. He's got nothing on us.
I have enough, Corby.
When, may I ask, did you tip off this detective, Slade?
I saw Mrs. Regan's car parked outside your apartment building. I called Sergeant Dinelli from the lobby, told him I had a hunch it was you that killed Regan. I convinced him I could lure you back to the house and get a confession.
How stupid of me.
Yeah, I've seen them all shapes and sizes. They all end up tripping themselves. You can't beat the law. I wonder when people will realize that. Hey, you did a good job, Matt.
You know, I think I should start working on commission for you people, Sid.
Yeah, you'd probably do all right at that. Hey, why don't you come over to our side of the fence, huh? You'd make a good cop.
Me? In uniform?
Look better than a trench coat. All right, let's get these birds downtown.
I'd figured this a tough case, and it was. I almost lost my life solving it. If you're wondering about the outcome, it was like this. The embezzlement was brought to light due to the circumstances, Mrs. Regan and David Corby. Miles is experiencing the big sleep. Because of it, Corby will face the electric chair. As for Marion Regan, well, she won't be mixing with her socialite friends. They don't have too many of those in jail. And oh, if you're wondering about that $250,000 Miles stole, it turned up in his safe deposit box an even thousand. Well, not quite. The last thousand had been broken into even hundreds, but there were only 9 of those. Now, what did Miles do with that missing hundred? I wonder if Raymond Chandler could have found an answer to that. Maybe I'll try solving it myself. Anyway, in my file, I've labeled this little misadventure a case of murder.
This is the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
That's it for this episode of Case Closed. You can find more from Broadway Is My Beat, Matthew Slade, Case Closed, everything else Relic Radio at the website relicradio.com. Listen to our Shoutcast stream there and donate through the website as well. If you'd like to help support this and all of the shows, it's how it's all made possible. My thanks, as always, to those who have helped out, and thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next Wednesday with another episode of Case Closed.